from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
You're working from home. You settle in with a cup of coffee, ready to get the day started. Before you look at that to-do list, turn on your favorite Odyssey sports station on your smart speaker. We'll keep you company and bring you the latest updates from your teams while you tackle your inbox or get ready for another meeting that probably could have been an email. Power through the workday with the entertaining sports coverage you love from the local voices you trust. Just ask your smart speaker to play your favorite station.
Dan Wiederer.
You've got a guy with credentials, you've got a guy with some qualifications, and now there's just, when done at its best, provides a level of steadiness and stability that helps create and stimulate success.
On-air contributor for 670 The Score.
Listen, we're not going to accept the status quo. We are going to push for more. We are going to strive for more.
Co-host of the Take the North podcast with our own David Haw.
We're going to take the North and never give it back.
Dan Wiederer with Mully and Haw on 670 The Score.
Bear down. Let's go.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Mully is off today. It's a beautiful Friday morning in Chicago. The day after the Bears finished their preseason undefeated, 34-21 winners over the Kansas City Chiefs in Kansas City, which brings us to our Aturo Tire Hotline. Aturo, your hometown tire, Aturo.com. Dan Wiederer covers the Bears for the Chicago Tribune. Also, my co-host on the Take the North podcast. Good morning, Dan. How are you?
I'm good, David. How are you doing this morning?
Doing well. Stayed up late. Watched that. Took some things away from the experience. It was backups against backups, but still there are things that matter and are relevant to the roster construction of this team. Dan, what was the biggest thing you took away from last night?
Yeah, I mean, if you're into the Austin Reed to Tommy Sweeney touchdown pass connection, that was there for you on a Thursday night here in late August. Obviously, Velus Jones put his best foot forward as a runner last night and showed you some of that explosive playmaking to kind of put in his closing arguments for a spot on the 53-man roster. I also thought they gave a lot more playing time than I was expecting to Tyler Scott, but I liked it because I think that's a second-year receiver who, as we all know, was converting from running back when he started college. And so he has a lot to polish up in his receiver skill set. And I thought he did some good work last night and had some production that should help him build some confidence and momentum heading into the regular season.
So I think I disagreed mildly with Bigsy, who was on earlier in the program. I thought that Velus Jones, 13 carries, 111 yards. He had the 39-yard touchdown. I believe it was 39 yards. The cut back, this burst, I know it was against Chiefs backups who might not even be on rosters next week, but did he play his way onto the roster by showing a burst at running back that maybe they wondered if he could have?
Well, I don't know, because you're talking about a very crowded running back's room, David. And so, you know, if you're looking at Velus Jones to get him 2 or 3 touches a game, is that worth the roster spot that you're going to have to use when you have other areas that you need to shore up? Injuries are going to factor into this as well. Dante Pettis got hurt in practice on Tuesday. He was a guy that was trying to stake a claim to a backup receiver job as well as the punt returner job. And so there's a lot of roster mechanics that are going to go on this weekend as the Bears try to put this puzzle together that sort of complicate that discussion a little bit. You have to figure out how many running backs you want to keep, how many wide receivers you want to keep, and then you have to figure out who can help you the most on special teams when you're getting down to that bottom of the roster sort of decision-making time. And so look, like, we know what Velus is as an explosive playmaker. There's a lot more to it. And we've talked previously about, you know, learning to protect as a running back, learning to run routes as a running back, as opposed to a receiver. Those are all things that the people inside Hellis Hall are going to have to put under the microscope as they have their conversations this weekend, and then figure out, is there a spot for Velus, or are we better off going in a different direction? And so that will be one of the you know, 2 or 3 things that you're watching when roster cuts come up on Tuesday.
Is there anybody in the Bears organization asking the question, does he remind you of Cordarrelle Patterson? Is that a ridiculous question to ask, Dan? Because I think that is the best case scenario, that he resembles a mini version of Cordarrelle Patterson, one of the best returners, one of the most versatile players in the league. I don't know if he's going to be that, but when he can play running back and get over 100 yards, even though it's a preseason game, you wonder about the potential and how high the ceiling could be.
Yeah, I don't think it's a ridiculous question because I think there's a lot in both of those guys' skill sets that is similar, right? Like both came into the league as receivers, had a little bit of trouble breaking in at that position at a level that was, you know, productive enough for people. But you still see the combination of size, speed, strength, vision, the things that Velus can do with the football in his hands intrigue you. And he showed that last night. And I think for his sake, that, you know, that was a really, really positive performance. Now, I think you've said it twice already. You have to keep the context in mind. This is the second half of the final preseason game, and we know kind of what that looks like. And so, yeah, look, like there's a lot here for Ryan Poles to decide. And what I love about the construction of this roster right now is they have decisions, you know, and it's not just cut and dry. It's pretty easy. And the, you know, the bottom of the roster is just, okay, well, these guys all are pretty similar. You've got some battles and you've got some guys with talent that aren't going to make this football team at several different positions. And that's where you want to be when you're trying to build your team into a group that can be competitive on a level much higher than we've seen in recent years.
Speaking of the 53, I suddenly wonder more about Larry Borum's place on it, not because of his play, but because of the injury, the ankle injury that he suffered makes me wonder about what the next move will be. They have until Tuesday to figure out exactly how serious it could be and maybe their options. I was also surprised, Dan, as you pointed out to me last night during our text exchange, he's due to make $3 million a year as a swing tackle. That's good money if you can – that's a good job if you can find it. Is that make him more valuable, worth keeping, or more vulnerable, worth cutting?
I think more vulnerable, honestly, when you've got guys that are kind of on that bubble and you're saying, I'm not sure, maybe, maybe not. Let's figure out how it looks. And then you look at and see that the base salary for 2024 is close to $3.2 million. It factors in for sure. And I don't know the severity of the injury he suffered last night. You could be looking at a situation where it might result in some form of injury settlement here in the coming days or weeks. And then you just have to figure out where you pivot at that point, because the swing tackle position is something that you have to lock down. I know when they drafted Kieran Amagaji back in April, the thought was that maybe as a rookie, that could be a role he could settle into. Well, his recovery from the season-ending quad injury he suffered a year ago has been slower than I think a lot of people expected. And so he's not really ready to go into week one in that role. And so then maybe it's Matt Pryor. And so this is all of the sort of the puzzle that Ryan Poles has to piece together as he dumps that box of pieces out on his desk this weekend and tries to figure out what this roster is going to look like.
Speaking of Amagaji, why didn't he play?
Well, I think it's a ramp-up period. I mean, he's just gotten cleared recently, and you've got, you know, I'm not sure he's ready for game action yet.
Okay.
There's just a lot of conditioning and strength and getting yourself acclimated that has to occur before you just get thrown into your first NFL game. So I think that's what that was.
Looking at the quarterback position, you had to feel good for Tyson Bagent in that a day earlier, yeah, we were talking about how bold he sounded, saying that he has a future in the league and his ambitions, talking about starting and being better than anybody ever would imagine him to be. And then he had a good night. He had a good enough night to what they wanted to end it after two series to protect him from injury. I thought that his competitiveness showed, his athleticism showed. That 5-yard run was more than a 5-yard run. Diving for the pylon, getting it in the corner. Dan, if you are a Tyson Bagent fan, you were excited last night.
People who have resisted sort of the charm and the appeal of the Tyson Bagent story are really missing out, because what they discovered, you know, in the 2023 draft process was a dude that was going to give you everything every single day and was going to squeeze the absolute most out of his potential. And Tyson is determined to do that, both short term and long term. And when you see the way he's kind of grown this offseason as a quarterback, and when you see the way he's put that on the field here in the preseason and the time that he has had to play and had the production he's had, you say, man, I get it. I get why Ryan Poles feels so incredibly comfortable having him as the number two quarterback and not really second guessing it. And so it really is something to watch. I think Tyson has been very proud of the work he's put in to make himself better. And again, when it results in on-field success, everybody feels pretty good about it.
Let's talk about the defense, not necessarily personnel yet, but the approach. Matt Eberflus has not been shy in showing looks that reveal his his propensity to blitz out of the secondary. He likes that a lot, and he did it again last night in a game that meant nothing. How much of that is Eric Washington? How much of that is Flusie? How much of that is we just don't care what you see? We're going to come after you anyway.
Well, I was going to say, because Eric Washington, I think, has been given the controls to a lot of the play calling in the preseason, just as something that a lot of teams do at this time. And they get other guys some reps and give them that experience. I did ask Eric Washington earlier this week about how he feels about his secondary as it relates to creating pass rush. They've been very, very firm with their philosophy that they really, really want to create pressure with the front four and not really have to worry about sending extra. But you do have accomplished blitzers, guys that can do it at a high level. And then you also have a secondary that, David, as you and I have talked about, can create coverage sacks. And we've seen situations in 7-on-7 periods where there is no pass rush, where Caleb Williams ends up not throwing the football. And that's because nobody's open and your secondary is locking it down. And so I think the Bears do see this secondary as one of the better ones in the league, with an ability to create a ton of advantages for your defense, whether that's with the pass rush, sending them as blitzers, or whether it's creating that coverage that then, as you've heard for years, rush and coverage work together, and the Bears seem like they have a plan to make that work for them.
Last week it was Terrell Smith having an interception looking like he's a guy you trust. Last night it was Reddy Stewart having two and taking one back to the house with the pick six. There are a lot of guys in that secondary, depth pieces, that made strong cases for the roster. Blackwell comes to mind. Adrian Colbert made a great deflection, the best play of the night, maybe. Who among those guys might be out of luck because you could only keep so many?
Right, and I think probably the deepest position that they have on their roster right now, for sure. You typically keep 10 defensive backs. That's a combination of corners and safeties going into the regular season. And there's not a lot of spots up for grabs. That leaves guys like Reddy Stewart, Greg Stroman Jr., Adrian Colbert fighting for their place on this team. Now, look, we've talked. The practice squad has expanded. It's not 8 like it was when I started covering the league. It's all the way up to 17. And so there are very easy ways to keep guys that you really like around in that practice squad role. And so I think that's going to be a landing spot for guys that I just mentioned, guys like Stroman, Reddy Stewart, Adrian Colbert, because you do have 6 really good corners, 4 really good safeties that you believe in. And when that's the case, again, as we talked about earlier, when you're trying to create a competitive roster, having that quality depth is something that is going to make life hard on Ryan Poles for the next 3 or 4 days, but it's going to make life pretty easy when they get into the regular season, because you don't sit there every night going, man, if player X gets hurt, where do we pivot?
Up front on the defensive line, which could be maybe the weakest position group, Daniel Hardy had another strong game. Austin Booker had a nice spin move and was disruptive. Those are guys that have enjoyed strong preseasons. Dan, I wonder, though, as other teams whittle down their rosters, is the Bears' second best pass rusher on the roster yet? Do you think that they're going to look around and get somebody who might be proven, who might be a salary cap casualty, whatever the case may be? Is that guy a member of the Bears organization yet?
Well, look, we saw last week, and then we're reminded during the Hard Knocks episode on Tuesday night, that Ryan Poles is not comfortable with that position. The aggressiveness with which he pursued a possible union with Matthew Judon was notable, right? And so that means that you're going to continue exploring to figure out if you can find guys that can help you in that area. I thought one of the more compelling exchanges of postgame last night was when Brad Biggs asked Matt Eberflus directly about the lack of depth at defensive tackle and said, is that an area that concerns you? And Matt, who would typically maybe talk around a topic like that, acknowledged straight up front, like, yeah, we're going to have to keep our eyes open for guys that can help us in the middle of the defensive line as well, as much as we talk about the guys on the edges. And so that's going to be fascinating here in the next week to see where the Bears go, and then to watch around the league where some of the other dominoes fall and whether they can reach out and find somebody that they really like in that area.
Talking with Dan Weider from the Chicago Tribune, also the Take the North podcast, which dropped this morning, a post-game reaction pod. Dan was busy, but Adam Sadzinski and I did our best to do without you, Dan. We had our post-game observations. It was late, but it was fun. And that's also for people to check out. I want to ask you about the approach defensively. Yeah, the preseason is cool. It's our 4-0, first time since 94 and all that. Do you think the aggressiveness in coming after the quarterback, in disguising the looks, does that continue week one against the Titans? Do you think the Bears do have an element of, we may know that we have shown this look before, but we dare you to stop us now. We don't think you can.
Well, look, I think it's opponent specific, and I think that the best teams figure out a way to figure out that week's chess match early and then capitalize on it. And you're bringing Will Levis to a road game to start the 2024 season. And so there may be an opportunity to take a guy that doesn't have a ton of experience and try to throw him off and confuse him and make him worry early and often about where the pressure is coming from and where he needs to go with the football. And so, look, this defense, without question, has been the area of this team that really, since the first day of OTAs, we've said that looks really, really good. And they've done nothing but build momentum over the last 3 months. I think that group feels really good about their chemistry. They feel really good about having playmakers on all three levels of the defense. And I can speak with strong confidence that they are ready to play a regular season game because they feel like they've got the teeth to be a story in this league. As much as we're going to pay attention to Caleb Williams and track every step of his development, this Bears defense feels like it can be really, really good this year, and they may be the engine of whatever potential playoff run the Bears make to try and get into the postseason.
You just mentioned Caleb Williams. I think that's the longest we have gone talking about the Bears without mentioning his name. You had a nice sit down. You've got a story coming out over the weekend in the Chicago Tribune. Tell us about that and what your impressions were having the one-on-one with the Bears quarterback.
Yeah, well, my impressions are what they've been since April. Like, I landed in Detroit a couple days before the draft, really curious to you know, make my own judgments on who Caleb Williams is as a dude, who he is as a quarterback, who he is as a professional. And he's done nothing but impress me in those 4 months. So, he has a grounded perspective about him that marries up with this grand ambition that he has every single day. And you understand why coaches and players in that building right now are so magnetized by what he wants to be and where he wants to take them. I mean, this is a guy that truly believes he can be one of the best quarterbacks to ever play the sport, but doesn't get so far out over his skis that he forgets to put in the hour by hour work to get there. And so some of what Caleb and I talked about was just the mentality that he has, some of the natural connection skills that he has, which I think are going to put wind in his sails as he goes into his first regular season in the NFL. And you just have a guy that, you know, I think you said it well the other day on the podcast, that hasn't given you any reason since he became a Chicago Bear to feel concerned. Are there going to be bumps along the way? Absolutely. Are there going to be growing pains that are pretty pronounced? Absolutely. Are there going to be Sundays where we go, God, that was an ugly performance by an overmatched rookie quarterback? Absolutely. But I think everything that Caleb Williams has in his skill set and in his makeup gives you the belief that this was 100% the investment worth making.
Before we let you go, that has been the consensus, Dan. It's not unanimous. We heard from Sean King yesterday on The Score during the midday show, the former NFL quarterback, say that Caleb struggles really, really badly, to quote him directly, in throws that are on time and in rhythm, in the pocket. What did you think of that assessment and criticism, which has been hard to find when you're talking about Caleb Williams?
Yeah, that feels a little overly harsh to me. I mean, look, I will acknowledge readily that there have been some days out at camp where you walk back into the media room afterward and you go, man, I don't remember a single play that was memorable from a positive standpoint. And there are moments in 7-on-7 and 11-on-11 where the ball's not coming out quick enough. But I think even in the, you know, 3.5 dozen snaps that he took in preseason game action, there's several examples. There's a third down shot to DJ Moore in Buffalo that moves the chains and creates a scoring drive that was on time, in rhythm, and the ball went where it was supposed to go with velocity and precision. There were two against the Bengals, a quick, it may have been a first down play to Cole Kmet, top of your drop, hit it, throw it, rip it, first down, or 9 yards anyway. And then another one to Simba Webster in that game that show you that it's in there. It's a work in progress. He's going to have to continue to develop his pocket feel and become more comfortable on a regular basis there. But I don't see anything where we're going to get into November and go, man, this guy just doesn't understand the position and doesn't understand how it needs to be played at this level.
Great stuff, Dan. Have a good weekend.
You as well. Always good talking to you.
Dan Wiederer from the Chicago Tribune, also the Take the North podcast, which dropped a new episode this morning, and we will do more over the weekend, probably, depending on what happens with cutdown, which is due Tuesday. Rosters must be reduced to 53 at 3 p.m. on Tuesday. We'll follow it all right here on The Score. When we come back to baseball, our baseball expert, Bruce Levine, joins us next. It's Mullion Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
You're working from home. You settle in with a cup of coffee, ready to get the day started. Before you look at that to-do list, turn on your favorite Odyssey sports station on your smart speaker. We'll keep you company and bring you the latest updates from your teams while you tackle your inbox or get ready for another meeting that probably could have been an email. Power through the workday with the entertaining sports coverage you love from the local voices you trust. Just ask your smart speaker to play your favorite station.
From the mind of a two-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Baseball. Bruce Levine.
It's great to talk some baseball.
Score Baseball Insider, covering the Cubs and White Sox for more than 30 years.
Bruce Levine is a newsbreaker.
Inside the Clubhouse co-host, alongside our own David Ha.
We've got a lot of baseball conversation to cover in the next 2 hours. How are you doing this morning, buddy?
Great being with you, like we are every Saturday, 52 weeks out of the year, talking baseball on Inside the Clubhouse.
Bruce Levine.
That's a really good question, Bruce.
See, Bruce asked the first hard question.
With Mully and Ha on 670 The Score.
Welcome back. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Mully is off today. Now joining us on the Aturo Tire Hotline is Aturo, your hometown tire, Aturo.com. We have Bruce Levine, the Score's baseball expert, and my partner on Inside the Clubhouse. Good morning, Bruce. How are you?
Good morning, David. How are you today, this fine Friday? Are we talking White Sox, Cubs, or...
Let's start with Cubs. I mean, I know you always want to go White Sox. Let's start with Cubs. I think yesterday they scored 10 runs and they got 7 RBI from the bottom of the order. Pete Crow Armstrong with 2 runs batted in. Miguel Amaya with 5. Talk to Kuma about why Amaya has started to get a little bit hot of late. Are you buying it? Do you think he has had the breakthrough that we have been waiting for? What did the Cubs have with their young catcher?
Well, he has 10 RBI in the last couple of weeks here, so he's really picked it up. And he credits Craig Counsell with an adjustment on his leg kick. Stopped the leg kick, just moving the leg up a little bit in his swing now. So if you want to watch the difference in him, you know, look at video of him a month ago and then look at him right now without the leg kick. And he attributes it to that. The guy in the minor leagues, David, always hit, okay? Then he had injuries to his arm. He had Tommy John surgery. So he was a long way away coming back last year, catching, you know, 30 ball games and basically being a rookie starting at the position this year. To everybody's satisfaction, he's done a really good job catching and getting the confidence of the pitchers on a staff that has continued to improve and be the best pitching staff in baseball since late June. So kudos to him and Bethancourt. They're supplying a lot of offense right now that wasn't there earlier in the season.
It's been a week, but the Cubs for a Cure Radiothon still open. Donations will be accepted through Sunday the 25th. Here's how you can chip in. Fans can bid on game-used gear and custom cleats from the Cubs for a Cure game at cubs.com/auctions. All donations will be accepted on cubsforacure.com until Sunday night the 25th. Bruce, so the Cubs take off for a road trip that begins tonight in Miami against the Marlins. A 3-game series ends up going to Washington. They're away from Wrigley for a while. Mm-hmm. As they left Chicago, did you consider them a team when they return will still be in contention?
Well, they have to go 22-14 to win 85 games. At the same time, Atlanta, who's the team they're trying to catch, would have to go 17-19 to win 84. Atlanta has the tiebreaker. So if it's indeed Atlanta in a game, again, the Mets are a game and a half behind, so it could be them. It's going to be, you know, you're going to have to play 700 ball. Can they do it? I think so, because the reality is that their pitching is plenty good enough, David, and the bullpen is starting to even get better, okay? You're starting to bring young bullpen guys along at the end of the game. The confidence is sky high for those guys right now. So can they play close to 700 ball? I think they can. I think Atlanta is going to have a hard time. The Mets are going to have a hard time. They're not great teams. They're good teams. Atlanta decimated by injuries to all-star and top quality players with the team. So I think it can be done. They're just going to have to. You're just going to have to watch the Cubs and watch them. Grab at least 2 out of 3 in every series and better in some. It can be done. So I don't think it's all doom and gloom, but again, as they always say, council says it all the time, so does Hoyer now. They dug themselves a deep hole. They're going to have to get out of it.
Bruce, if I would have asked you at the end of spring training what the most distinct personality trait of Craig Council is as a manager, would your answer have been the same then as it is now?
I think it would be, and that is, from what I knew from of him as from afar, it was consistency, okay? A very consistent guy who doesn't let the highs and the lows of winning and losing impact him or the way that he deals with players or coaches, okay? I've seen tons of managers over the years I've covered sports and coaches in other sports. Nobody approaches that day with less emotion about the day before or what can be the day after than he does. It's all very much concentrated on that day. And he always, when we ask him questions as the media, he always brings back our focus to that day. And I think it's the one thing that the players have really clung to. As an example, Jack Neely making his debut the other day and getting pounded, right?
Mm-hmm.
So does he immediately go to the back of the bullpen and become a going into a doghouse? No. Instead, quickly, Council picked the ninth inning yesterday to bring him up, try to build him up. He threw a perfect inning, struck out 2 guys, and, all of a sudden you have a different dynamic for the young pitcher. I'm not telling you he's going to be great because of that. I'm just telling you that he manages people as well as anybody that I've seen in a long time.
Justin Steele has been great of late. He was great yesterday, 10 strikeouts. You interviewed him postgame. I'm worried about you, Bruce, going to Chicago Cuts so much, eating all those 32-ounce steaks with the winner and the player of the game that you're interviewing. But nonetheless, what has Justin Steele done lately that has made such a difference?
He is consistently throwing his pitches for strikes, okay? And there's nothing that you, when you watch Steele pitch, you don't say, wow, look at that 99-mile-an-hour fastball, or look at that great splitter he throws or changeup. He just throws 3 pitches for strikes, and he continues to do that with, his own type of dominance. So there's nothing dramatically great about him. There's something that's always really good, and he's totally consistent. Again, a guy that is not impacted by what occurred before or after. We've talked to him a lot about having only 3 wins going into, yesterday's game. After he's pitching probably as well as he did last year when he won 16, David. But, the consistency of the guy, I think the question is, with a couple of years left, do the Cubs tie him up to a longer-term deal in the offseason? I think he's already shown he's one of the best pitchers in baseball. So do they come to terms on something between him and them moving forward? The 2-year mark, David, seems to be like the old 1-year mark of, we have a year left. Now teams seem to want to decide on the fate of players with 2 years left rather than 1. To see if they're not going to be part of a team, if trading them would be the best idea going forward. I don't think the Cubs are considering that. I think they consider him their most consistent pitcher, but we'll see what shakes down in the offseason if that's a part of it.
Bruce, I got a kick out of you talking to, I think it was the Pete Crow Armstrong in the light of the Javi Baez tribute, and it was a great tribute on the video board the other day before Javi's first game back at Wrigley Field since the trade of 2021, and the fans still adore him for good reason. Pete Crow Armstrong was asked if he, what he remembered about, or I'm sorry, Javi was asked about Pete Crow Armstrong, if he played the same way, that, and he remembered, and Javi said basically, I haven't seen him play.
Right. Yeah. So, and that, you know, you're right. I use that at the end of my piece when I, after I asked him before the game, you know, about, I was expecting, you know, hey, yeah, he plays like, you know, with his hair on fire, just like I did.
Right.
He's a great defender. And Javi, you know, continued to be Javi, tell you the truth. To be honest with you, I've never seen him play. And it's like, okay. I mean, he was in the, you know, his bubble and he's there. It hurt me to watch Javier Baez play this week against
the
Cubs.
Yeah.
It just did. I mean, to see the greatness that was there, the special player that was there, and not to identify that any longer at age 31. David, 31, okay? He should be in his prime right now, okay? He should be having, you know, 25, 30 homer years, driving in 80 to 100, stealing 25 or 30 bases. Instead, you know, I talked to his manager, you know, and he said, yeah, we had to tell Javi that for the rest of the year, he's not going to play every day. It's quite a statement. 3 years left, $70 million, you know, very tough. There's some rumblings that they would consider if they can't trade him release him and pay him off.
Tough reality. Tough reality for 2016 heroes. This week, Jason Hayward designated for assignment by the Dodgers. Javi Baez facing rumors of his being bought out by the Tigers. That doesn't bode well for Kyle Hendricks pitching tonight against the Marlins.
Well, he's doing the best of the rest, I guess. You know, right now, Rizzo still on the IL, might be there the rest of the year. Bryant suffering with injury after injury, not playing up to any type of player that he thought he would be. It's a difficult time for the 2016 group.
Kyle Schwarber would like a word, Bruce.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, David, a big show for us tomorrow. Dansby Swanson will be joining us, as will Chris Getz, the general manager of the Chicago
Bruce,
White Sox.
Bruce, are you serious? Bruce, we got Chris Getz and Dansby Swanson?
That's it. 9-11 tomorrow.
9-11. I love it. This is who needs football season? Who needs Caleb Williams talk? We've got inside the clubhouse.
You do. And so does the score.
Great job booking that. All Looking right. forward to the conversation. Bruce, thanks for your time this morning.
Take care, David.
Bruce Levine, Score's baseball expert. You heard him tomorrow morning. 9-11. Chris Getz from the White Sox and Dansby Swanson, shortstop for the Chicago Cubs. Good Getz. GETS. Yeah, looking forward to that. Bruce gets the guests. There's no doubt about it. That's good. That's a lot of fun to do. And Kai Bush pitching for the White Sox tomorrow, I think, is going to be the highlight of the weekend for them. I think 3-game series against the Tigers. Difficult to see them winning the series, but Kai Bush against Skubal tomorrow, I think, is the best matchup. And Kai Bush has been pitching well of late, and he's a guy that could be part of things moving forward. The White Sox young pitchers give you some reason to watch. I know it's hard to. It's basically a race to futility to wonder if they're going to set the record. They're likely going to set the record. But still, next year is a different season, a new start. And the Cubs are at the Marlins, 3 games beginning tonight right here on the Score. 5:35 first pitch, 6:10. I'm sorry, 5:35 pregame with Zach, 6:10 first pitch. Looking forward to that series against the Marlins, of one they should really take care of business. So we will wrap things up. We've got the midday show is in Vegas. They are still probably recovering from a very...
You're working from home. You settle in with a cup of coffee, ready to get the day started. Before you look at that to-do list, turn on your favorite Odyssey sports station on your smart speaker. We'll keep you company and bring you the latest updates from your teams while you tackle your inbox or get ready for another meeting that probably could have been an email. Power through the workday with the entertaining sports coverage you love from the local voices you trust. Just ask your smart speaker to play your favorite station.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr Sides and Bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.